Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tucows' first quarter 2018's conference call. Earlier today, Tucows issued a news release reporting its financial results for the first quarter ended March 31, 2018. That news release, along with the company's financial statements, are available on the company's website at tucows.com under the Investors heading. Please note that today's call is being broadcast live over the Internet and will be archived for replay both by telephone and via the Internet beginning approximately 1 hour following the completion of this call. Details on how to access the replays are available on today's news release. Before we begin, let me remind you that the matters the company will be discussing include forward-looking statements. As such, are subject to the risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially. These risk factors are described in detail in the company's documents filed with the SEC, specifically the most recent reports on the Form 10-K and Form 10-Q. The company urges you to read its security filings for a full description of the risk factors applicable for its business. I would now like to turn the call over to Tucows President and Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Elliot Noss. Please go ahead, Mr. Noss.
Thank you, operator, and thanks everyone for joining us today. With me is our Chief Financial Officer, Dave Singh. I'll begin with an overview of the financial and operational highlights for the first quarter of 2018. Dave will then provide a detailed review of our financial results, and I'll return with some concluding comments before opening the call up to questions. The first quarter was a solid start to 2018, with strong year-over-year growth across each of our key financial metrics. Revenue grew 38% to $96 million. And net income increased 53% to $3.7 million, or 35 cents a share. Adjusted EBITDA increased 64% to $10.4 million, and cash flow from operations increased to $9.6 million. And I will note here, for comparative purposes, Q1 of last year includes the contribution of the Enom acquisition from January 20th onward, so for 70 days compared to 90 days this year. With respect to adjusted EBITDA, there is now only the typical impact of deferred revenue. Looking at each of our businesses, our domains business continued its stronger performance. As I noted on our last call, with Enom now having been included in our results for essentially a full year, beginning this quarter we are reporting the domains business metrics on a combined basis. I will also note that at the beginning of the quarter, as discussed on our last call, we completed the bulk transfer of 2.7 million domain names related to Namecheap and accelerated the recognition of 14.6 million in revenue associated with this name, with these names. And I further note that was with very little gross margin. In our wholesale domains channel, total registration for the combined OpenSRS and Enom businesses were 4.4 million. So right in line with performance over the last 4 quarters, taking into account the impact of the transferred Namecheap names. Notably, with the transfer of those names, the renewal rate for the combined wholesale channel improved quite significantly to 78%, as the transferred names had much lower renewals. The retail channel also continued its consistent performance, with total registrations for the combined Hover and Enom businesses of about 450,000. That represents year-over-year growth of about 12%, although I will note that this is a little outsized due to the additional 20 days of Enom transactions in Q1 this year. So we expect the combined retail channel to trend back to low single-digit growth in Q2 when we have full quarter year-over-year comparison. The renewal rate for the retail channel also jumped in Q1 to 81%. We do expect that to return to a more typical historical level in Q2, but still remain nicely above the industry average. Starting with OpenSRS in late Q1 and continuing with Enom in June, we've taken the opportunity to revise and increase our wholesale pricing. This was intended to address the increasing complexity, especially related to regulatory compliance and the impact of GDPR. This has also allowed us to deal with pricing disparities in the Enom business and to offer discounts that better reward size, growth, and strong performance, as well as to more closely align pricing for the two brands. Finally, on domains, The integration of Enom continues to progress on plan, as does our work on GDPR. We continue to expect to be operational and compliant by the May 25th GDPR deadline. Turning now to the Ting Mobile business. First, I want to mention that we did a bit of cleanup on how we were defining an active Ting Mobile account, identifying and removing some accounts that did not actually have any active mobile subscribers, usage, or revenue. As a result, our active accounts dropped by about 6,000 even before we get into actual adds and cancels for the quarter. Subscribers, which we have historically called devices, revenue and margin are unaffected. So while accounts drop, subscribers, revenue, and margin per account all creep up a bit to land back in the same place. We also made a change to how we measure churn. We often have customers who come to the service, take advantage of promotional credits, and leave before ever paying anything out of their own pockets. We generally consider that an acquisition failure rather than a retention failure. So we've been subtracting those customers from ads as if they never came. While that might be the right way to track and diagnose the issue internally, it was problematic for public disclosure. Those customers could sometimes spend months with us on credit before we determine that we have to go back and revise ads to never include them. So now, these customers, which of course we make every effort to avoid, will count as both ads and cancels. This will increase our churn rates a bit, but it will increase gross ads as well, such that net ads, the most important metric, are unaffected. We also have revised historical numbers so that any comparisons to the past include both these both those higher churn rates and gross ads. With that change, we actually entered the year at about 166,000 accounts and 282,000 subscribers. We finished Q1 with just over 165,000 accounts and about 286,000 subscribers. So accounts were down about 1,000 and subscribers were up about 4,000. And we saw churn outside of Ring Plus customers of 2.77% in Q1, down from a retroactively adjusted 2.94% in Q4 2017, and up a bit from 2.49% in Q1 a year ago. So churn is still mostly in line with history and expectations. Also, Ting accounts continue to activate more subscribers, which drives the healthier subscriber numbers. Our concern is really with gross account adds, which were down about 10% versus the prior quarter and nearly 20% versus a year ago. That drop is driven by a significant decrease in unattributable adds, those customers that come to us presumably through word of mouth beyond the attributable adds we drive through our marketing programs. We are, as always, exploring ways to achieve broader brand awareness, doing more proactive media outreach, pursuing more offline SIM card distribution, continually experimenting with scalable online channels, and exploring narrower targets based on geography, demographics, or affinity, where we can potentially enjoy a much larger share of voice. That is not enough. We now recognize clearly that the four major carriers who still own over 90% of the market have made significant changes and improvements since we launched Ting 7 years ago. They have made those improvements in their customer experience, most notably in their desktop and mobile interfaces. They have addressed key customer pain points. Most importantly, across the board, they have launched more affordable, high data, and unlimited plans and shouted about it from the rooftops. The acquisitions and relaunches of both Cricket and MetroPCS have filled in a lot of the white space we previously occupied. We see strong evidence of these improvements in some publicly available data. In consumer reports, where Ting has enjoyed ratings in the high 80s to low 90s, the carriers have gone from an average rating of about 66 in 2015, when we were first included, to about 73 in 2018. Average churn across the carriers is also down since our launch in 2012. It seems customers are generally less frustrated by their providers now, less inclined to look around, and perhaps less impressed with what they see out there when they do a comparison. We still believe there is an enormous difference in experience between Ting and the carriers, and our customers still boast real monthly savings. Our Net Promoter Scores and churn indicate that our customers are still delighted once they find us, but there seem to be less prospects out there looking in the first place. Plus, while the category has shifted considerably around us, aside from a couple of rate decreases, we have not made substantive changes to our approach in 7 years. Our margins are frankly a bit higher than we need them to be. Our costs per acquisition remain low. We think that when we launched, we simplified the space. Now others have caught and passed us in terms of simplicity. The good news is lower costs, higher margins, and continued efficiency in operations will see cash generated continue to grow while we do our work. Finally, I will inevitably get questions from shareholders about how a T-Mobile-Sprint merger affects our T-Mobile business. I want to take this opportunity to officially announce that I have no idea. I think operating Ting on a larger, faster network would help us better compete with AT&T and Verizon. We think new T-Mobile should be just as enthusiastic about the wholesale business as old Sprint and T-Mobile are, and more. Enabling MVNOs like Ting would help support their claim to regulators to be increasing competition and benefiting mobile customers. We think the category could become even more competitive at the top, as T-Mobile and Sprint claim it will be. That would make life tougher for Ting. Or the carriers could become less competitive, particularly on price, as can happen when one major player is removed, creating more opportunity for Ting. A certainty is that we will no longer be dividing our annual commitment between two carriers, and this could further benefit our costs. The process of regulatory approval will take significant time and will have many twists and turns. Meanwhile, we remain focused on our opportunities and are greatly looking forward to a fresh look at a business with the highest customer satisfaction for mobile phone service in the world. I will now move to the Ting Internet business. Last quarter, I shared that we had passed 16,000 serviceable addresses and had about 4,500 customers across our three active markets, Charlottesville, Holly Springs, and Westminster. In Q1, we added 1,500 addresses and 500 customers for totals of 17,500 serviceable addresses and roughly 5,000 active customers. I note that this quarter contains a lot of preparatory work in Centennial and Sandpoint, continued retooling in Charlottesville, and in Westminster, we wait for the city to deliver more serviceable addresses, with the next build phases in the second half of the year. We remain on track to end the year with 40,000 serviceable addresses, although I do feel compelled to note this is a construction project. In Charlottesville, we expand the network to new neighborhoods while we upgrade the network we acquired in original neighborhoods. In Holly Springs, we march towards coverage of all those potential serviceable addresses by the end of the year. Construction in Centennial and Sandpoint is going well, and both are on track to light up their first customers this summer. While we continue to breeze through 20% in pre-orders, we know the hardest work in this business will be getting from 20% adoption to the 50% we've talked about, and we're excited to start developing the experience and skills we need to do just that. Finally, just last week, we announced our next Ting Town, Fuquay-Varina, Varina, North Carolina, just a few miles south of Holly Springs. Fuquay-Varina represents an additional 9,800 potential serviceable addresses. It has all the qualities we look for in a town, including, perhaps most importantly, a team in Town Hall that is eager to partner with us and knows how to get big things done. And in addition, we get some operating efficiency, being able to leverage our existing Holly Springs team. Our other towns have included corporate acquisitions, new kinds of public-private partnerships, or entirely new construction challenges. Each of them had us starting from scratch, building a team on the ground and awareness in the community. Here, we get to leverage a construction team that has done great work just one town over, operating in a similar landscape. We also get to market to households that have been pining for us since we announced Holly Springs about 2.5 years ago. That advantage has been evident already, as we have seen our best week of pre-orders ever following a first announcement. We expect to start construction in Fuquay's Arena this summer and hope to start lighting up the first customers by the end of the year. Again, we remain on track to expand from our current 17,500 serviceable addresses to over 40,000 by the end of the year. We remain optimistic about the fundamental assumptions of the business. 20% adoption after 1 year and 50% after five. $2,500 per home lit at that 50% adoption with a return of $1,000 in recurring margin a year. And while I'm at it, I would also like to reiterate our EBITDA guidance from last quarter. I'd now like to turn the call over to Dave to review our financial results for the quarter in greater detail. Dave?
Thanks, Elliot. Total revenue for the first quarter of 2018 grew 38% year-over-year to a record $95.8 million from $69.6 million for the same period last year. The increase was primarily the result of the Domains business, which increased $19.9 million, benefiting from an additional 20 days of contribution from Enom in Q1 of this year compared to last year, as well as the accelerated revenue recognition of $14.6 million related to a bulk transfer of nearly $2.7 million Namecheap domain names during the first quarter of 2018. I should note that, as Elliot mentioned, that the accelerated revenue recognized also generated $14.5 million of accelerated cost of goods sold. In addition, the larger Ting Mobile subscriber base and contribution from the RoamMobility asset acquisition in the third quarter of 2017 contributed to the overall revenue growth. Cost of revenues before network costs increased 39% to $73.2 million from $52.6 million for the first quarter of last year, with the increase driven by the growth in revenue. Gross profit before network costs increased 32% to $26.8 million from $20.3 million. As a percentage of revenue, gross margin before network costs for the first quarter was 28%, down slightly from 29% for Q1 of last year. The year-over-year gross margin percentage was positively impacted by the Q1 2017 required accounting treatment for deferred revenue under the Enom acquisition, which has now been almost fully realized. This positive year-over-year change was offset by the margin dilution associated with the bulk transfer revenue and COGS acceleration noted previously. I'll now review gross margin for each of the domain services and network access businesses. For domain services, gross margin for the first quarter increased 35% to $15.4 million from $11.4 million for Q1 2017. As a percentage of revenue, gross margin for domain services for the first quarter was 21% compared to 22% for Q1 of 2017, which reflects the full 90-day contribution of the Enom businesses in Q1 of this year, impacted by the two drivers discussed above. Drilling down into the individual components of domain services, gross margin for wholesale channel increased 34% to $10.7 million from $8 million for Q1 of last year. As a percentage of revenue, gross margin for wholesale decreased to 17% from 19%. Excluding the bulk transfer, accelerated low-margin revenue of $14.6 million, the gross margin for the wholesale channel this quarter would have been 22%, which would have been a 3.5% increase over Q1 2017. Gross margin for the retail domain services increased 43% to $4 million from $2.8 million for Q1 last year. As a percentage of revenue, gross margin for retail services increased to 48% from 44%, mainly driven by the impact last year of the amortization of the fair value adjustment. Gross margin for portfolio services increased 8% to just over $700,000 from just over $650,000 for Q1 last year. As a percentage of revenue, gross margin increased to 79% from 71% in Q1 2017. Moving to network access, gross margin for Q1 2018 grew 28% to $11.4 million from $8.9 million for the same period last year, driven primarily by the growth in Ting Mobile subscribers. As a percentage of revenue, gross margin for network access increased to 48% from 46% for Q1 of 2017. Turning now to costs, network expenses for the first quarter of 2018 increased 27% to $4.2 million from $3.3 million for the same period last year. The increase is primarily due to the additional 20 days of contribution from the Enom operations and amortization and depreciation of the Enom technology assets acquired. Total operating expenses for the first quarter of 2018 increased 22% to $16.9 million from $13.9 million for Q1 last year. The increase is primarily due to the following. Workforce and third-party workforce-related expenses, excluding stock-based compensation, increased $2.1 million, primarily the result of the continued growth in their Ting Mobile and Internet subscriber base and footprint, and to a lesser extent, unfavorable foreign exchange impacts from a stronger Canadian dollar in the first quarter of 2018 as compared to the first quarter of 2017. Stock-based compensation was up $300,000, primarily from the grants in the third quarter of 2017, while credit card processing and professional fees were also up $300,000. Depreciation and amortization was up $450,000, primarily related to the acquired Enom intangibles related to brand and customer relationships. These increases were offset by marketing expenses being down $400,000 year over year due to the timing of Ting Fiber marketing spending in their various markets compared to this year. As a percentage of revenue, total operating expenses decreased to 18% from 20% for the same period in the prior year. Net income for the first quarter of 2018 increased 53% to $3.7 million, or 35 cents per share, from $2.4 million, or 23 cents per share for Q1 last year. Adjusted EBITDA for the first quarter increased 64% to $10.4 million from $6.3 million for Q1 2017. Turning to our balance sheet and cash flows, cash and cash equivalents at the end of the first quarter of this year was $16.6 million compared with $18 million at the end of the fourth quarter of 2017 and $15 million at the end of the first quarter of 2017. The decrease in cash from Q4 was the result of the use of $4.5 million for the repayment of our loan, the investment of an additional $5.1 million in the continued build-out of the Ting Internet footprint, and $1.2 million for the acquisition of the remaining 10% of Blue Ridge Internet. These were substantially offset by the generation of $9.6 million in cash flow from operations. Deferred revenue at the end of the first quarter of 2018 was $151 million, down from $166 million at the end of the first quarter of last year, and $161 million at the end of Q4. The decrease from the fourth quarter is due to the Namecheap revenue acceleration previously mentioned. That concludes my remarks, and I'll now turn the call back to Elliot.
Thanks, Dave. I had the opportunity to be in Omaha last week for the Berkshire Hathaway AGM. One cannot walk away from this event without thinking about simplicity. Cash-on-cash returns, betting on people, long-term thinking, and most importantly, compounding. That feels very consistent with our view of 2018 as a bridge year, as a year when we're engaged in generational work to set us up for the next number of years. In both the domains business and the mobile business, we are at pivot points. In mobile, after 7 years of successfully running the same playbook, we've identified a clear need to reposition the service and set it up for the next phase of growth. Doing so on top of a loyal, satisfied customer base makes that work easier. I will talk more about this next quarter. With the domains business, I want to share a longer view. Since the launch of the Ting Telecom businesses, we've been talking with investors about the domains business using adjectives like consistent, reliable, and low to moderate growth. We've positioned it as a business that provides a platform for these other lines of business to grow from, both in terms of capital and competencies. But it may be time to return to some of our dreams. When we created the wholesale domains business at the dawn of the new millennium in January of 2000, our dream was to create the greatest distribution channel on the internet. In many respects, we were successful. We have loyal, long-term channel partners all over the globe. They have represented some of the most successful internet services retailers in the world through three generations of internet services retail. From dot-com boom cos like Lycos and Yahoo, through first-generation web hosts like the Endurance Group, to next-generation internet services retailers like Squarespace and Shopify. And despite a hyper-competitive, low-margin industry, this business has grown, in terms of gross margin dollars and contribution, 17 of its 18 years. That is a fantastic record for any business in any segment. And now, with the platform work that is well underway, with an increased importance on privacy and users being able to control their data, and with people having an increased need for help and simplicity in dealing with all of this online, the role of the trusted service provider and our role as a key supplier to them takes on increased importance. We are coming at this opportunity with a fresh set of eyes, thinking long-term, simplicity, compounding, people, and relationships. Compounding. Every time we treat a customer fairly, it compounds. Every time we take a little longer on an install, it compounds. Every time our customer service people help a customer with a service that is not ours, it compounds. This compounding is why Fuquay Varina was so eager to have us come to town. This compounding is why changes we make to simplify and improve our existing services will have outsized effects. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to the operator for questions. Operator?
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from James Barnby with DKAM. Your line is open.
Hey there, Elliot and Dave.
Hi, guys. Hi, James.
Just wondering if you could talk through the synergies from the Enom acquisition, where we are with that, and if it's kind of going according to your plan.
Yeah, so first, all is moving nicely to plan. I'll always, I've been caveating that for probably the last three quarters with, GDPR work is a bit of a black hole that certainly, causes, a bit of slowdown. We've tried to leverage as much of that as possible, so we'll have that shouldn't be a big deal. We're still pointing to seeing the dollar synergies, while the work goes on, sometime, kind of middle next year or so. And where you really see the synergies is when we can take advantage of reducing the data center footprint, getting away from some of the licensed software on the old Enom platform, and then a couple other, kind of operating angles like that. So the work goes for a fairly long period of time before we start to see those dollars drop.
So in terms of kind of what you outlined for dollar synergies, have you realized about half of it? Are you halfway through, or are you further along?
No, I'd say, the vast majority of the $5 million is still to come.
Okay.
So we've been talking really about that since the time of acquisition, as the almost all of that will come, as we're really able to kind of shut down the older platforms.
Right. So kind of end of this year, early next year is when...
I kind of say middle of next year. Again, you got the GDPR work, which we really have to see what happens when it gets in the market. I'll remind everyone on the call, starting May 25th, you will not be able to look up the ownership of a domain name with nearly either the ease or detail that you could before. So if you're wondering about any, get those lookups in.
Okay, thank you. Just related to that as well, the sales and marketing was a little higher than I had projected. And I think Dave mentioned something, but I didn't catch it. So I was wondering if you could just give any color on the increase in the sales and marketing expenses there.
Are you talking quarter over quarter now?
Yeah.
So what you might have seen quarter over quarter, if you remember back to last quarter, we went through that pullback in the Ting mobile marketing where we wanted to get a better read objectively on attributed versus unattributed and what the knock-on effects of the advertising was. So in the quarter-over-quarter comparisons, that will stick out a bit. If you compare that number sort of to previous quarters, you go over a longer time frame, you should see a relative, there's always going to be a little bit of movement around there, depending on the programs and where and when we're running them, but you should see relative smoothness at that point. Anything else, Dave?
And just to reiterate that our sales and marketing number includes our customer service costs.
Yeah.
So those are up year over year from Q1 of last year.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. And were there any costs related to the bulk transfer included in just kind of your general expenses?
Some of the professional fees.
Sure. There's some solid professional fees in there for sure.
Professional fees being technical?
Professional fees being legal.
Okay. Sorry, where's that captured under?
That's under G&A.
G&A, okay, perfect.
I never like doing too much of that. You know, it's a one-time event. You know,
right.
So we really weren't, you know, pulling that out.
Okay, that's helpful. With the Fuquay Varina, we're, you know, happy to see that expansion, and I imagine it must be a lot easier to expand to neighboring communities than starting a brand new Ting town in a brand new state. And I was just wondering what the likelihood of seeing this kind of dynamic occurring with other Ting towns.
So I think you'll see some of it with just about every footprint. Or, you know, if I was thinking out, let's say 3 years from now, 5 years from now, I think you'll see it more often than you won't. You know, in Sandpoint, right from our initial discussions with Sandpoint, we were talking with some of the surrounding towns. In fact, a lot of those dialogues were, you know, we're right at the beginning, you know, we're concurrent. With Charlottesville, you know, we've already done some work sort of outside of city limits. You know, if you're in a place like that, now if a new housing development is going up, you know, they're in touch with us before we know about it.
Right.
So, you know, I think you see that kind of, you know, that spilling into contiguous areas. It'll take different forms in different markets, but I think it'll be more the rule than the exception.
Right. Okay. That's helpful. Last question for
again,
me.
Sometimes it's towns, you know, sometimes it's a whole town like it is here. Sometimes it's just contiguous neighborhoods, et cetera.
Gotcha. Okay. That's helpful. Last question, just on the subscriber count for Ting Mobile. I kind of understood how you're redefining it. If I was defining it under the old way, mm-hmm. would the Ting subscribers go from 172 down to 171? Like, was it a net subtraction, correct?
That's right. Yeah, it was. You know, we're still. It was an equally poor quarter in that regard.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I understand that. Okay. Well, thank you very much, and. Talk to you again soon.
That's great. Thanks very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Patrick Retzer with Retzer Capital Management. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for another good quarter.
Thank you.
So I believe it was in your 10-K I saw that you own 38,000 surnames over in the domain business.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me that that's likely a pretty valuable hidden asset. Can you talk about what the value of that is, what those trade at, and versus what it might be on the balance sheet at?
So there's a few things there. First and most importantly, you know, those are, like with all domain names, but, you know, the surnames as well, they're relatively illiquid. So I don't like to, you know, make too big of a fuss about them. You know, I will say that they have been consistently performing. You know, we have, if you go to realnames.com, you know, we have a service where we offer personalized email addresses. It's been around for over a decade. The customers there love it, but it's one of those things where I've never been able to figure out why it doesn't, you know, sort of blow off the shelves. Everybody that I know that gets a personal email address, so, you know, pat@retzer.com or net, loves it. They get it for their families, et cetera, et cetera. You know, one day I'd love to see something big happen there. But I'm always reticent to sort of, you know, over the years I've been reticent about, you know, trying to point too much to kind of off-balance sheet value because, you know, I'd always rather, you know, under-promise and over-deliver, so, you know, having it sort of not thought of and then contributing every once in a while, you know, is preferred by me. You know, when we do sell a surname, which is rare but occasional, that it tends to be a, you know, a solid mid five figure and up sale. And I think the last point I'd make, I mean, there's been years of amortization coming out of it, but it's probably that stuff still on the balance sheet in the $12 million range or so, Dave. $11 million. I wasn't bad. That's not bad. I feel like I got pretty close there, not having looked at that number in a long time. Thanks.
Okay, so they're on your balance sheet for about $300 per, and they trade in the $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 range occasionally.
I can't argue with that, Pat. But again, they trade very.
Okay, so congratulations on Fuqua Verena.
Thank you.
Sign up. Now, looking at a map, there's about 10 or 12 other cities, municipalities within 5 or 10 miles of Holly Springs. And following up on the previous caller, should we be expecting that each of your current cities sort of become a locus from which you'll branch out into neighboring municipalities and just continue to grow?
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, I'd repeat parts of that answer. I mean, I do think that will be more the rule than the exception. I do want to be clear that we are not opportunity constrained here. You know, I would describe that as we're building as effectively as we can. And I didn't say as fast as we can, because we really do try and get that right as we're doing it, you know, and I can connect that back to my compounded comments. You know, it takes a little bit longer to do it all well as fast as possible. So, you know, we really do try and only take on what we can handle organizationally and not overstretch ourselves. But, you know, the opportunities are there, and every time something like this happens, you can be sure that there's another town close by saying, what about us?
Okay, well, great. So, I mean, you have the ability to grow that business as fast as you determine it's prudent. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. I'm not opportunity constrained. I mean, I don't want to create, you know, I think there's a lot of moving parts to this business, and being operationally constrained is a real constraint. I mean, it's a real substantive constraint. And I think that you're going to see us consistently increasing the number of serviceable addresses that we deliver every quarter and every year. You know, I would love that to be the case year over year for years. But, you know, whether that increase is from 16 to 40 like it is this year, you know, whether that's 24,000 like it is this year, you know, does that go up next year? Is it 30? Is it 40? Is it 50? You know, that pace will be dictated as we go along. And I'm sure there'll be some discontinuity in it, too, in the sense that, you know, there'll be an opportunity or two that's outsized that might, you know, have a little bit of a step function there. But generally speaking, it's just keep increasing that number. Just keep the crank turning.
Okay. And then I believe in the last call you said the fiber business in and of itself would be cash flow positive in from today, what's less than a year from now. Is that right?
It'll start to be around that time. And again, you know, I'm going to give more visibility every quarter as we get closer. And again, the only other caveat there is that's on a sort of a direct expense or a city level. That's not considering, you know, the Toronto or the head office expenses.
Right.
Kind of, you know, I like to think about those businesses as the sum of a series of small businesses. You know, Charlottesville is a fiber business, and Holly Springs is a fiber business. You know, do we combine Fuquay Varina and Holly Springs in thinking about it? Probably. But, you know, each of those, you know, is kind of their own business, and they each have their own idiosyncrasies, their own operating characteristics, their own competitive landscape, et cetera.
So you talked about long term. You've got two cash cow businesses and the fiber, which within a year is likely to turn into a cash generator. When you lean back in your chair and think about that, you've been masterful at allocating capital. Where do you think the opportunities will be to utilize all that free cash flow?
I'm going to be, you know, and I think we're going to be laying fiber for the foreseeable future. There's so much opportunity, we think, in this space that we're not going to tap out for a while.
Okay. And then in the domain business, just backpedaling a bit, you talked about these new requirements that everybody needs to get up to speed on. Do you think that will limit the competitive field and perhaps give you some pricing power?
Well, you know, I think that any time you increase regulatory complexity, you raise the barrier to entry. But it would be a mistake to ever consider that the domain name business is not a competitive business, and, you know, one where you could ever sort of count on being able to just have pricing freedom. You know, it's an incredibly competitive business, even with our significantly large customer base, you know, by far the largest in wholesale. You know, boy, there's still, you know, two, three, four other small competitors who are very, very competent and that we respect and you know, wouldn't consider taking any of them granted, either competitively or at a customer level.
Okay. Well, thanks, Elliot. You continue to be the master of the understatement, and I'm sorry about the Raptors, but thanks for another great quarter.
Me too, Pat. Thanks for that. Thanks for thinking.
There are no further questions at this time. I will now turn the call back over to Mr. Knopf.
Thank you, operator. Thanks to everyone listening. We look forward to speaking with you all next quarter.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.